Hello and welcome to another episode of the Ice Cream for Everyone podcast. I'm Willem Vanderhorst, your host for the show. If ever you're not familiar with the show, this is a show where I have conversations and interviews with professionals in a wide variety of fields, starting with my own field in marketing and advertising. So I'm a marketing and brand strategist. So in other words, for anybody not familiar, I help brands understand how best to communicate with their audiences and solve a wide array of business and communication problems. I am also a big fan of tabletop gaming, role-playing games, board games, and any kind of different game mechanics. So I typically interview people revolving around the field of marketing and advertising or around game design. Occasionally licensed for interviewing like various random people that I'm really interested in and that I think are going to be fascinating for other people, well, for you guys, my audience, or whoever, you know, you, the listener, for you to be listening to. Now, of course, the show is available on iTunes or on the iPhone podcast application, on Stitcher, and a bunch of other different places. Of course, you can just listen straight on my website. The website is www.icecreamforeveryone.net. That's everything spelled out, icecreamforeveryone.net. If you do listen via the iPhone podcast app or iTunes directly or Stitcher, it'd be amazing if you could subscribe. Even more amazing if you could take a couple of minutes and give us a review, a rating, give us like several stars, four or five ideally, and a review. And it makes a hell of a difference if you do. Like really, if you take a bit of time, if you enjoy this, of course, you know, if you don't enjoy this, give me feedback by email. But if you do enjoy this, please give me an amazing review or just any kind of review would be amazing. I don't know how the sound is going to sound because, of course, I left it to the last minute to record this intro, but I'm in the not so sunny south of France right now. It's surprisingly cloudy. Exactly at the moment, I'm just leaving London. It was really warm and sunny last weekend in London, but I'm on holidays and I'm celebrating my father's 70th birthday. And happy birthday, Dad. I know my father is one of my faithful listeners, and we're going to have an amazing time. He rented a house in the lovely countryside. Couple of his old friends who flew in from the United States. I'm really looking forward to hearing some of their old stories from when they were currency traders together in Wall Street in the late 70s and early 80s. We've got amazing dinner plans, of course, some rare breed of beef, aged Côte de Bœuf, traditional Dutch smoked eel from a tiny producer in Friesland in the north of the Netherlands, a range of about absolutely amazing wines from all around France. We're going to be traveling with that. Of course, including some of my own sister Saskia's wine, Domaine Les Arabesques. All very exciting. We're going to have an amazing meal and we're going to have an amazing family time here. But of course, becoming a bad habit that I'm recording this intro just before publishing. But anyway, it's always nice to give you a few snippets of what's going on around here in Ice Cream Willemland. And we have a very exciting episode today. I caught up with my friend James Watley a few weeks ago in London, which was heaps of fun. And James is a digital director for Ogilvy & Mather in London, one of the largest advertising agencies around and around the world. He's a big mobile phone geek and fan and co-hosts a weekly podcast separate from his day job as digital director and strategy director over there. The podcast is called The Voicemail. Highly recommended if you want to geek out and hear about all the latest mobile device news and technologies. May it be the latest iPhone, the latest Android devices, what's going on in tech with Google, Samsung, LG, whatever it is, all these different guys. He's also known online and on Twitter as Watley Dude. You can find his website and blog and Twitter handle, Watley Dude, and his really, really good weekly newsletter called Five Things on Friday. That's on his website or on his Twitter handle. So his Twitter is Twitter at Watley Dude, or his website is WatleyDude.com. That's WHATLEY, dude, D-U-D-E. But anyway, all the links are going to be in the show notes. And I first met James back in, I think it was 2008 or maybe 2009, I'm not sure, like through other friends in common. At the time, I was going to, and he was too, I guess, going to a lot of different social media networking events around London. We met through like various acquaintances and, you know, really got on. We don't really see each other very often, and plus, you know, I was in Asia for several years, but it's always an absolute pleasure, like, catching up with him. He's really brilliant, super smart guy, has an infectious enthusiasm for all sorts of geeky stuff that I really enjoy talking about as well. He's had some brilliant news that he's going to talk about in the beginning of the episode, so I'm not going to, like, break anything, but it was a fantastic conversation, so I hope you have as much fun listening as I did having it. And that's about it for now. Without further ado, here's James Watley. Steve, welcome to the show.
Thanks, William. How are you?
I'm doing great. It's absolutely brilliant to catch up with you. It's always a pleasure to see you. So thank you very much for making time. Really appreciate it.
You're very welcome.
I understand so we haven't seen each other for like over a year now, but now you just got back from a holiday. You were just in Istanbul, I think, right?
Yes, I got back from Istanbul yesterday. I took my girlfriend there.
Yep.
On Sunday. Today's Thursday. And then on Tuesday, or was it Monday? I think on Monday. Yeah, it was the 4th. On Monday, she stopped being my girlfriend and became my fiance, which was lovely.
Congratulations.
Thank you very much.
How did you propose?
If
you can talk about it.
I had plan A and plan B. Plan A wasn't possible. So always have a plan B.
Okay, so that's worth knowing. Anybody listening to this?
Always have a plan B.
Right.
But there's a beautiful... So did you know, you're part Dutch, aren't you?
Yeah, my father's Dutch.
So you might know this. Tulips originated in Istanbul, in Turkey.
I did not know that.
So they're famous in Amsterdam,
yeah.
But they originated in Turkey.
Oh, cool.
And so in Istanbul, there's this huge tulip park
okay. Called
Emirgan Park. And they run a tulip festival every spring.
Right.
And it's spring. And we were there. And I tell you what, it was beautiful. I'll show you some photos afterwards.
Yeah, definitely.
And when I looked it up, it said, you know, lots of people have their wedding photos there. And honestly, we run out of fingers of counting all the different couples. And they had these little arbors where people could sit and have their photos taken. And one freed up. And I was like, well, can we just pop in here for a minute? She was like, yeah, I just want to ask you a favor, if that's okay. She went, yeah, sure. Come in. Da-da, done. There was tears, like an old Turkish couple walking past, clapped,
really?
And wanted to take our picture. It was, yeah, it was lovely.
Oh, that's awesome.
It was really lovely.
Oh, I'm so happy for you. Congratulations.
Thank you.
That's brilliant. Cool. All right. So let's just track back from the beginning. And I remember from the couple of conversations we've had in the past, you're one of the people I consider that I know to have a pretty fair... to encyclopedic knowledge of American comic books.
Yes.
Right? And growing up, I'm wondering, did you have like an absolute favorite character or one that really had a big influence on you growing up?
For comic books?
Yeah.
Crumbs. You know what? It's funny. So my route into comic books was art orientated.
Okay.
So I took GCSE art. And I still sketch from time to time. My other half is the better artist of the two of us. I think this kid in school, kid called Gordon Williams, gave me Wolverine number 90.
Okay.
And Wolverine number 90 is a beautiful comic book. I have two editions, one that I've never opened and one that is the one that he gave me, which is behind you on the bookshelf. And I'll show it to you. And inside is the pages fold out.
Okay. Every one of them?
Not every one of them. Every now and then you'll get like a 4-page spread of Wolverine fighting Sabretooth, and it's over 4 pages and it's amazing. And I drew that and drew it from all different angles, and I literally must have redrawn that comic book from cover to cover so many times. And there was a point when I was living with my parents when I had one wall covered with all of my sketches. And so in an influential way from what I used to draw, yeah. And all of my artwork comes from that. So I used to draw a lot of profiles, a lot of faces. A lot of comic book work is facial.
Yeah.
There's a Catwoman hanging up in the hallway, which my other half painted, but I did the eye for, because I've spent my entire time drawing like profile pictures of cartoon characters and comic book characters.
Yeah.
So Wolverine... And then since Batman, I draw a lot of, like, my iPad in the other room, but...
Well, that's okay, people can see.
Yeah, I was going to show you, but nobody else can see it.
I'll have to add a couple of, like, if there's screenshots available, I'll put them on the show notes, but, you know.
But just sketching. It's really sketching.
And so just to make sure, because I'm not always exactly sure of the UK school system, GCSE is what, like 12-year-olds? 12-year-olds?
Yeah, 12. GCSE is 15, 16.
15, 16, sorry.
You take the GCSE, so you do art 11 to 16.
Okay.
And then around 12 or 13, it says, okay, what do you want to take as your GCSEs? And I chose art.
Okay, got
instead
it.
Of, I don't know, religion or something.
All right, got it.
So I love that. Art or religion? Take your pick.
Art or religion, really? Is that the choices?
So. I think they came under humanities.
Sorry, all right, so where was this? Where did you grow up?
Canby Island in Essex, deepest, darkest Essex.
Canvey Island, is that an actual island? Or?
Yes, it's about, 4 by 3 miles, I think. It's somewhere between, we used to call it the cleft between the
buttons. Is it like a bridge or just off the coast?
There's two bridges that come onto one roundabout. And so if there's an accident on that roundabout, nobody goes anywhere. When I was growing up there, I think there was about 50,000 people that lived on the islands.
Okay.
And then when I left, or nowadays, I would imagine it's much higher, probably about 85 to 90,000 people, because they just built and built and built.
So yeah. what kind of, like, growing up did you have on that island? Like, what kind of friends did you have when you were a kid? Or,
it's funny.
Like, the quiet kid, the rambunctious kid, the...
I was a bit of a loner, I guess. At school, definitely.
Mm.
My friend, so I've got only a few friends now who still, well, one particular friend who I've known since I was about 8 or 9 years old. And we grew up on the same street. We didn't go to the same school. And I wouldn't say that I've got any school friends that I'm still friends with. It's very different. Didn't really just fit in, I guess. Just did my own thing. I remember this, and this is so ridiculous. I remember being, 12 years old and just being bored. And I think I'd recently taught myself to juggle. And so I just put a notice board up saying juggling lessons in the quadrangle. And then anybody who wanted to come juggle, I was like, okay, cool. And then just like teaching people to juggle. I was like, while everyone else was playing football, I'm in the quadrangle teaching people how to juggle, because that's what I wanted to do.
That's awesome.
But yeah.
Where did you teach how to juggle? Out of book or?
I learned out of book. My mum bought me some juggling balls for Christmas 1 year. I didn't touch them until about February. And then I learned. I started learning in February. I think I was going out with a girl in school and it all went terribly wrong. And I was like, well, I'm not going out anymore. I'm just going to stay home. I think it was going through my teenage poetry years as well. You know, you write angst-filled poetry.
I actually know that, yes. Very much so.
And I learned to juggle. And I think within 2 or 3 months, I was juggling knives and juggling fire.
Oh, really? Mm. Do you still, like, occasionally? Do you still keep up the skill?
I've got some balls around the flat somewhere. It's actually, as cliched as it sounds, juggling is very much like riding a bike.
Yeah.
As soon as you know, you know.
Sure.
One of the remarkable things about it, and it's quite similar principles apply to acrobatics. Can you juggle?
No, I've learned with, a friend in common, Adam, who was all on the first episode of the podcast, actually, can juggle because he teaches circus skills. So I'm, you know.
In fact, the first time I juggled.
See, I did the basics once, and you say it's like cycling, but I didn't.
I fall off the bike a lot. The first time I met Adam, in fact, he may have been the first time he came back to the flat. I challenged him with circus boy skills. And we started playing, and he went, and I remember the surprise in his voice. He went, "Oh, you can really juggle." I was like, "Yeah, I know."
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Go on. Yeah, no, sure. So you're also known for those video games. As we're working in, you're just playing some PS4. When did that kick in? When did the first?
I've always been a gamer as long as I can remember.
I was trying to ask, like, the first time you remember.
For as long as I can remember, I want to be a gamer. Super Mario Brothers on the NES.
Yeah.
For some reason, I remember this. I remember always being a year behind or a gift behind everyone else.
I absolutely relate to this.
So the year everyone got their TVs, I got my bike. The following year, or for the next big thing, like birthdays or Christmases, everyone got their Nintendos, I got my TV. So I was always a bit behind. You know, everyone got their bike and I always got something else. But I was always a bit behind.
Yeah.
And so they always had like a 6 or 9 months ahead of me on whatever they were doing. In Mario Brothers on the NES, nobody ever told me what the run button was. And I couldn't jump on the flag at the end of the level. And it really drove me crazy. and then I read the instructions and I figured it out. And then I made it my thing. So I couldn't ever get the game or the system early. But whenever my friends got it, I would just sit in the corner and read the instructions. So when it got to my turn or when I got the game, I would just rinse it as quick as I could. And that, amongst and a few other things, earned me the nickname when I was a kid of Professor Watley, because I'd always be sat in the corner doing the reading. No, you have to push A and B at the same time, or else that won't work.
That is so funny. I recognize myself into this kind of stuff as well. I had the same kind of thing. I was not called Professor anything, though, but that's really funny. So you studied arts, and then you got into performing arts, right?
Yes.
How did that, so theatre or?
Yeah, so I did, so again, First play I did, I think I was still in junior school, so before senior school, so 9 or 10. Mm. We did Aladdin, and I played the Grand Vizier, and I remember being the Grand Evil Vizier, and wearing my mum's earrings and makeup. Awesome. Brilliant. And Mrs. Sinclair being really proud of me, and we did the play. I think we'd done a few other plays as well. Mm. Me and a kid called Carey sat opposite each other, not too dissimilar how we are now.
Yeah.
Did our own impression of Smith and Jones.
I don't know that, sorry, because that's Smith my UK Jones,
kind lack of late 70s, early 80s comedians.
Okay.
If I showed you photos, you'd recognise them.
Okay.
But they always had during their TV show, they had a skit where they would dress just in white shirts opposite each other and talk about a subject, and it'd just be very funny.
Fantastic.
Anyway, so yeah, from junior school to senior school.
Yep.
Performing arts in senior school. And again, yep, missed the first year somehow. There was a first year of plays, which I missed. And then every year thereafter, did the school play, culminating in Greece in my final year. I was Daddy Zuko. Yeah! finished that. Then went to college, did BTEC in performing arts. Then stayed on and did what they called an EPA, which was the entry into performing arts, which is basically an adult performing arts course.
Did you have ideas about what you wanted to do with that, or what kind of acting you wanted to do? Or
my love was always directing.
Oh, okay.
Which I kind of uncovered through doing acting.
Yeah.
When we're doing your BTEC, you do, I think first year is music, dance and theatre, dancing and acting. And then you choose two to kind of major in for the second year. And I chose dance and acting because I love dance as well. I came very close again to dance school.
Oh, okay.
But whenever I did any theatre, there was always kind of a dance element to it.
Yeah.
And for the EPA was to do your Lambdas, and Lambdas is the London Academy of Music and Dramatic Arts.
Okay.
And you get medals and so on. And I got my silver, I think, my bronze and my silver. I failed my silver the first time, so got it on my second time, and everyone else was getting their gold.
How does that work? Is it competitive? Do you have like judges or panel of judges? Or how does it?
So you do your monologue and so you get a piece, you get a piece of reading. Crumbs, this is a long time ago. you have a piece of text that you get cold, so you don't know what the text is going to be.
I think got it. Yeah.
And I think you have to take in 2 or 3 monologues, and then you perform it to one person. So it's just you and one other person in the room.
Right. Okay. Wow, that's tough, right?
Yeah, it's tough.
Yeah.
So did that, but again, throughout the first year of the BTEC, having really good lecturers pointing out and going, I remember reading one of my college reports and Val, one of my lecturers, saying, James, you not only have good ideas, but you have good ideas that work. And
it's a nice compliment.
Yeah, it was really nice. And actually, one of the things they instill upon you, I don't know if you've ever done any theatre stuff.
I actually have, when I was a teenager as well.
Okay, so you're right. You're on the same track here.
That's so funny.
One of the things that they teach you is to not be afraid of ideas. And maybe we'll come back to this.
Absolutely.
And, you know, being able to do the Tom Hanks in Big element of putting your hand up and saying, I don't get it, is the same as, you know, spending an afternoon smelling each other's armpits because you need to get close and friendly with the person near you, because that's kind of what you do. Because what if we all dressed as pigs and then sang the song backwards, miss? Well, we'll give it a go. But, you know, there was no wrong answers in theatre school, right?
Yeah, that's great.
And so we always, so we did.
Did you try any improv?
Oh, tons. Yeah. Tons. We got to the point where
I'm thinking of taking classes again, actually, because I used to.
Improv when
I
was classes.
Yeah. Comedy, something.
We used to have such fun where improv was a huge part of what we did, because we did a play, I think in the first year or second year, I can't remember, called Adventures in the Skin Trade.
Okay.
And it was kind of the semi-autobiographical play of Dylan Thomas's early life. So everyone Welsh. And Welsh accent, by the
way. Sorry, I don't know who Dylan Thomas is. Just for our listeners who might not know. I, of course, know who that person is.
Okay, I'm going to have to look this up while I'm talking to you. Dylan Thomas. Dylan Thomas is a famous Welsh poet, and you would know his work. So the poem Do Not Go Gentle Into
You know that I was raised in France, right? So
I know, but the poem Do Not Go Gentle Into That Good Night.
Oh, yes, I do know that.
Dylan Thomas wrote that.
Okay, got it. Okay.
Cool. Anyway, Adventures in the Skin Trade. Part is set in this antique shop. It's ridiculous. And in the first part of this play, it ends with the main character, he may have even been called Bob, I can't remember, Dylan. It wasn't Dylan, it was something else. Gets a vase, about halfway through, he gets a vase or a cup or something stuck in his hand.
Mm.
for the rest of Act One, you're trying to get it off and so on. Towards the end of Act One, everyone's trying to get it off. And then at the end of Act One, he meets his partner and his long-term wife or girlfriend who succeeds in pulling it off. So not that, that cup can't come off until you meet that person. And somebody managed to pull it off mid-play and slipped out of their hand, smashed on the floor. And we were in the midst of about to call the play to an end because we didn't know what to do. And then me, in full character, swept it up, stopped it, like, oh, darling, what have you done, silly boy? Because that was the character I was playing. And then grabbed another cup and went, have you seen my cup collection over here? Grabbed his hand, put it in there, and then walked off. I forgot about it. When we hit halfway, everyone came in, lifted me up, cheered me, and I'm like, guys, you would have done the same. You should have done the same. It's what we've been training for, just to improvise and just get through.
Yeah.
Normally the audience are on your side, right?
Yeah, that's really good. I think we're going to be able to come back to that and find some kind of link with other things later.
Oh, there definitely is.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. And then, all right, so you graduated from that and then you started working, I guess. What were you up to? What were your plans? What was going on at that point?
I finished college and went to theatre school.
Yeah.
There's a theatre school called The Poor School, which is on Pentonville Road. Mm. If you've been to King's Cross and wandered up towards Angel, you've walked past it.
Yeah.
Did that. And then when I was doing that, I got a job, and this, I always get these mixed up. I got a job as a runner for GMTV. So Good Morning Television was the breakfast TV show here.
Yeah.
And I was a guest greeter.
Okay.
So I was meeting people like Ronan Keating, Victoria Beckham when she was a singer.
That's cool.
A solo singer. I remember having a stand-up row with Colin Farrell's agent because Colin Farrell had rocked up to the sofa around 6 a.m. straight from the pub, completely smashed, and his agent refused to sign the waiver form allowing us all the rights throughout the universe of the footage. Anyway, right. all pre-YouTube days. And then I got I'll try and make this brief. I know I'm talking a lot.
Well, that's the whole point.
And then I got
you're doing fine. That's exactly what you're supposed to be doing.
I got one day I was in the finance department because I had to take the waiver forms to the finance department. They were having a technological meltdown, which I then helped fix, changed the filing system, updated it because I was a geek, just knew how tech worked. And they were like, oh, you should come work here in the afternoon. You know, we normally have an intern from university, but we didn't really have one. So do you want to take that role for the year? I was like, okay, but I have a job running. He's like, yeah, you can do both. Great.
Good.
Knackering, but great.
Yeah.
And I'm a chatty bloke, as you know.
Yeah. So wait, so the geek and technology link, like, so
it's always been there.
It's always been there in the background.
Yeah.
Okay. Cool. And when did you? I don't know which year we're at, but at that point, are there already mobile phones?
2000 to 2001. So I got my first mobile phone when I was 17.
What was it?
I couldn't tell you the make of it. It was one of those like non-branded Vodafone-owned pieces of hardware. And I've tried to find what make it was because I wanted to know because I went through this huge mobile geek phase, as you know.
Well,
but I got my first, and that was one of the ones where you could like type in the different tones and make your own ringtones. That was before I'd got my, after that, I then got like a 3210 or something.
All right, sorry. So you had two jobs running at the same time. So you're running for GMTV and you had this other thing.
And that would have been the year 2000, 2001. Okay. No, it was 2001 because I was at GMTV when the towers came down.
Right.
It was in the morning. No, it was in the afternoon. I was upstairs giving over the forms, and someone from the news department ran in and said, well, I need to get to New York immediately. And they're like, no, they've shut New York. You can't go.
Yeah.
And I was there throughout the whole time. The following year, I think the contract ended, but I was a chatty chap, and the whole building, so the LWT building on upper ground on the South Bank, it's now the ITV building, is where all the studios, everything from Graham Norton to Saturday Night Takeaway is all filmed there. Yeah. And we all share the same canteen and we get to know people and all the finance people get to know each other and all the runners get to know each other. And I got offered a job as a finance person with occasional running for Granada Television. LWT Factual, as they were then called. I worked on the first two seasons of I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here.
Okay.
Then the ITV digital crash happened, like the bottom fell out of the market. And I got made redundant. And at that time, on the day I got made redundant, I put down a deposit with my then other half on a place to rent in Strawberry Hill in Twickenham.
Okay.
And I was like, shit, I better take a job quick. So I took the first media accounts job I could find, which was working for a newspaper accounts company somewhere in Kensington. And I got stuck there for about 3.5 years.
All right. And meanwhile, like, you always have, like, what were you still developing your background interest in mobile? Or did, did your love for Nokia devices already start at that point?
Yeah, but kind of latent. I didn't know it was happening.
Okay.
Always
like... just stuck in, like, snuck in.
Sorry. Just massive nerd, complete geek, always dicking around, you know, how can I get this ringtone? You know, how can I get this picture on my phone?
Yeah.
And then one day I downloaded an app from the BBC. And it was the first BBC News app for Symbian handsets.
Mm.
And I think I had like a 6630, which was the Nokia.
Sorry, just for people who might not know, Symbian was the operating system that ran Nokias. Well, that Nokias ran on, sorry.
Yeah, so they had like a two-tier system running. They had a Java system for low-end and Symbian for kind of high-end, in inverted commas.
Okay.
And it didn't work. Well, it did work and then it broke. And so I emailed the BBC and said, this doesn't work. And they said, oh, you need to speak to the people that built the app. Mm. This is the company, they're called Refresh Mobile. Mm. The app's built in a thing called Mobazines. Go and speak to them. So I emailed them and I said, guys, doesn't work. And said, okay, well, do you want to let us know? Do you want to pop by the office or swing by or whatever? And we'll let you know. That'd be weird. I then figured out how to what the problem was. Whole other story about Vodafone changing their...
Figuring out what the problem was that involving software stuff or like opening your phone, tinkering?
No, software. It wasn't a hardware issue, it was a software issue.
Did you ever open phones, tinker with them?
Oh yeah, there's a box behind you with phones in. Okay. And I'll show you again.
We'll come back to that.
And when I figured it out, and it's basically a protocol change that happened on Vodafone's side and they hadn't prepped for it. Because you had to tell the app what to look for and it wasn't looking for the right protocol. Anyway, I then emailed them that and then they said, okay, cool, where do you live? We'd love to send... No, where do you live? What's your address? I'm like, where do you want my address? That's a bit weird.
Yeah.
And they said, for every user that finds a bug that we didn't know, we'll send out a 30 quid in the post or something from this website, which is basically a rebranded firebox.com website. Or... come and spend a day at the office. You never know, we might offer you a job.
That's great.
Right? And I was like, sounds amazing.
Yeah.
So I went home that night to tell my other half this story. And as I walked in through the door, I was like, oh, I've got something to tell you. She goes, can we talk about something else first? I'm like, sure, what is it? She went, I don't love you anymore. And I was like,
oh, shit. That's, crap. Completely different.
Like, whole world fell apart.
Yeah.
So following day, I'm back in the office in pieces, trying to get through everything. And this email, I go back to my inbox and I find this email. I'm like, you know what? I'd love to come and spend an evening at the office. Because I think it was phrasing an evening. Because at that time, going home was rubbish. Because we just lived together. Yeah.
No, absolutely.
I was like, I'll spend an evening at the office, actually.
Oh, you need something to change your mind anyway. And like, actually, it's brilliant. It was great to do that.
And so I went. And I remember getting on really well with all of the teams. So everyone from the dev team to the marketing team to the finance team. And the finance team going, yeah, thanks very much. We don't really need any finance people, so maybe we'll come back to you another time. So, because I'd slowly turned into this finance person over the course of about 3 or 4 years.
Were you already into social media at that point, doing anything like, I don't know, Friendster or?
Not really. I mean, I had a few. There was a gaming forum. So this would have been about 2005.
Do you ever get anything in like chat rooms, ICQ, MRC, that kind of stuff? Not really.
So MSN and Yahoo mainly. Yeah. But also, I was part of a gaming group through gaming, Nintendo VIP forums.
Right, yes.
And there were topics that we weren't allowed to talk about, which is so weird. Yeah. Nintendo Europe wouldn't let you talk about games that weren't released in Europe. So anytime we wanted to talk about a game, because we used to import games all the time.
That's right, yes, I remember
so
that.
So weird. And so we had this big thing about a game called Animal Crossing, which was never going to come out here. And so we used to refer to it as the banana game. And then this one day, they cottoned on, so we just sacked it off. And we started our own gamer forum called PGF, Project Gamer Forum. And it's still running. And like, there are people from that who are now friends of mine today.
That's awesome.
Who I still game with.
Brilliant.
That to me says more to me than whether or not I still talk to people from school. Which, I mean, school is such a weird place.
Sure.
So that happens. So that would have been March in 2005, 2006, I forget. and then in May, Well, in that time, I read a Guardian Online article. That's how long ago it was. It wasn't theguardian.co.uk or .com. It was theguardianonline.com. About this guy who'd gone to Thailand and had been cleaned out enough and that he passed a marble that he must have eaten when he was 4 or 5 years old. So isn't this funny, James? You know, sending you around on email, because that was before social media. You just sent all jokes around on email, like your grandpa still does, or your great-uncle still does.
Yeah, for sure.
And I read it and thought, oh, this is great. I need to do this. I need to go to Thailand. I need to do this detox spa thing and go. And so I did. And I went at the end of April, May, I think. And that's a whole other story.
Sure.
But I came back lighter, considerably lighter, and with a new sense of purpose. I think I came back May Day, bank holiday weekend. I got back into the office. When I got back Sunday, bank holiday Monday, went out shopping because none of my clothes fit. I remember being in a shop in Kingston saying, so, is this shirt too tight? It's like, tight's very good on you, so it's fine. Thank you. I think I'm clearly doing something right here. And I shaved all my hair off as well. And I went back into the office the following day. And it was like, who are you? You've been away for 2 weeks and you've come back a completely different person. Sat there thinking, I hate my job. I hate my life. This is ridiculous. This is going nowhere. Emailed Mobazines again and said, guys, touching base, hope everything's all well.
Mm.
My life's changed direction. I'm looking for a change. Even if you need a new T-boy, I'm game. Can we have a chat?
Yeah.
They invited me in. I went to see them literally the following day, on the Wednesday. I had a chat with their chief marketing officer, who actually emailed me yesterday. I haven't spoken to her for ages. And their CEO. And I told the chief marketing officer everything I've just told you, the whole story about how I'd got to being sat in front of her. Yeah, just like, you're finance. Why am I talking to you about a marketing job? Or an intern job, whatever. And then Scott, the CEO, came in and said, here's the Java version of our phone. Here's the Symbian version of our app, sorry. And here's the Java one, Symbian one. What's good? What's bad? Go for it. He went out. I was like, we've got nothing to lose. Went to town on it. And then when he came back in, we had a real collaborative session about, you know, have you thought about this? Yes, but not about that. So let's do this, let's do that. And then he said, okay, I'll make you an offer. And then hired me as ostensibly a junior product manager. And that would have been starting in June 2005, I think, 2006.
Fantastic. Wow, brilliant.
And never look back. And that's kind of the start.
And that's really the start of where you're at now, basically.
Yeah, because the Mobile Geek stuff started then as well.
Oh, yeah, so that was one thing. You started a meetup group, Mobile Geeks of London, which was...
Yes.
Yeah. So, well, which was, I mean, simply a meetup group. I don't know if there's anything else to it.
Well, actually, there's a bit of subterfuge in that as well. So, because we built Mobazines, and this was an app-based proposition, and then we pivoted about a year later into a thing called MIPPIN, MIPPIN.
Okay.
Which is still going. It was a mobile web proposition.
Yeah.
And this is pre-iPhone.
Yeah.
Or pre-iPhone apps. So the iPhone was out for about a year before they released apps for it. And so we wanted to build a way to get the Geeks of London talking about it. So I set up Mobile Geeks of London to meet as many Mobile Geeks as I could to soft launch this product with them all, get feedback there and then. And then it turned into this quarterly meetup thing with about 600 members.
I remember it went pretty big. I mean, I attended only a couple of them, but it did become quite large at some point.
Yeah, we did them all over the world. We did some in Canada. We did some in Vegas.
Is it still going, or like did somebody else pick it up? Or
not I kind of let it go away because the industry's moved on.
Yeah.
The categories moved on. Meetup groups moved on. But I'm still, the connections I made in those groups, the stronger ones are still there.
So. Yeah, absolutely. And then on other side projects, I don't know if it was later or not. Like one of your side projects in photography called MC Underground.
Yes.
So just can you explain what it is? I don't know if that was related chronology, but it doesn't matter actually.
Chronologically, I guess it goes back about 5 years from now.
Yeah, it doesn't matter anyway. Because I think it's a cool thing, so just love to talk about what it is.
So part and parcel of the phone love is the phone camera love.
Mm.
And what phone cameras can do. I remember being utterly obsessed with what phone cameras could do. Mm. When the Nokia N8 came out, which was a 12 megapixel camera with a Xenon flash, stunning phone. I started a whole new photography blog specifically for it.
Yes.
Because the photographs it took were incredible. I can't remember when it started, or the first one that I did. That's a fib. I do remember. I was walking from Waterloo and City. So the Waterloo and City line, you go from Bank to Waterloo.
Yeah.
There's a tunnel that you have to walk in.
Yeah.
I can't remember which end it's at. I think it's at the bank side. T to get to the station. And it's just this one long, beautiful tunnel.
I remember it, actually. I know it, yeah.
And I saw it, and I snapped it. And it was empty. And it was beautiful. And then whenever I see it now, I just take a picture of it. And then about two, maybe...
So every time you see the underground...
Empty.
Empty, yes. Of course, as simple as checking, but...
About 2 or 3 years ago, I realised I had loads. And it's all on the hashtag Empty Underground, both on Instagram and on Twitter. And loads of other people are doing it now, which is great. I had loads. So I just put them on a website, so emptyunderground.com. And it went nuts. Like, it was in the Daily Mail. It was in Time Out. It was on It's Nice That, which is really lovely.
Yeah, that's really nice.
And it's really funny. People are like, oh, how do you do it? How do you do it? You sat there for ages. And I'm like, no, not really. It's kind of...
opportunistic.
It is opportunistic. And I kind of have a sixth sense for it now. You can kind of tell if it's going to happen.
Mm.
But commuters breathe.
Yeah.
And so when...
they come in waves, right?
You mean, yeah, they come in waves. And so my favorite one, so whenever I upload one, it's always name of the station, the time, and then the hashtag. That's it.
Mm.
So my favorite ones are like Baker Street, 8:36 a.m., and people are like, how is it empty at 8:36 a.m.? You're like, well, there's literally a half a second where everyone's got on and people are coming down the escalators and there's that like moving space that you're caught in.
Yeah.
Turn and snap.
That's cool. Mm. Very cool. And so another side project, I think we absolutely have to talk about the Lucozade traveling around the world doing all sorts of crazy things.
Yes.
So what was that? How did that happen? What was this whole thing?
So,
you know, I mean, travel is also a big thing I love, and I mean, who doesn't really? But
I must get my years right on this. I think it was about 2009.
It is.
So yeah. I'd finished Mobazines. I'd been and worked at Spinvox, which is the company I worked at after Mobazines, and then at the end of Spinvox, I was looking to go freelance, and the first thing that came up was this Lucozade competition.
Mm-hmm.
And
they, so literally like a promotional ad that you saw or
no, somebody emailed me actually. Okay. And said, this is being organized, we'd really like you to submit an application for it.
Got it.
And the application was first basically just one email, just email this email address and tell them why it should be you.
Yeah. So what was the...
My email, it said something like...
No, but what was the thing to do?
The job description.
Job description, okay. So I don't know if it was a job
be,
or...
Yeah, it was to be the social media reporter for the Lucozade Energy Challenge 2009.
So for anybody who doesn't know, Lucozade is a energy drink?
Yeah, energy drink.
Okay.
And it's not caffeine-based, it's sugar-based, so there's a difference.
Okay.
And they... or glucose, whatever it is. And they said... So for that summer... you could win if you open a bottle of Lucozade, you could win, and then you and three of your pals would be taken away somewhere to complete a Lucozade energy challenge.
Okay.
And the whole pitch of this whole thing was, instead of, and you probably see these promotional packs all the time, oh, do this, win that, do this, win that.
Yeah.
But what I really liked about it, what was attractive to me was, A, yeah, great, the prize, but B, the story didn't stop when somebody won. The story started. The job for the social media reporter for the competition was to go with the competition winners on their prize and write the Lucozade Energy blog, keep the Lucozade Twitter up to date, upload videos to the Lucozade YouTube account.
And basically sounds like
tell,
fun, right?
Yeah, and tell the story of the Lucozade winners on their challenge because they would get there, learn a skill, become good at the skill over the time they're there, and then have to complete a challenge at the end of the week. So the first submission was... why should it be you? And I said, you know, just reeled off stats. Like, I think at the time I had 1,500 Twitter followers. And I was like, I've got 1,500 Twitter followers and I've uploaded 2,000 photos to Flickr and all of them are geotagged and I know my stuff. And then round two was interview your mate, his favorite sport. Interview your mate about his or her favorite sport. Submit that with 200 words and 10 photos and a 2-minute video. And that'll be submission number two. And I very nearly didn't do it. I didn't want to be one of those late night YouTube shows like, these are the people who tried to get into Big Brother and never got in, that kind of thing, do you know?
So wait, just before you got into that, were you already blogging?
Blogging, yes.
Yeah, a lot. And so...
so I started blogging when I went to Thailand.
Okay, got it.
Because I wanted to... the reason I started blogging was because I wanted an opt-in postcard.
Okay.
I got really tired of people who were traveling... who would then mass email everyone. It was just like, it's just so impersonal. And I wanted to start writing about my, because I knew what I was going to be doing in Thailand was quite significant. And so I started writing ahead of Thailand. So at the time, and I caught some theatre I was doing. I did some theatre. I got back into my theatre around that time as well. excuse me.
And that's then, okay.
And it became an opt-in postcard. And so when I got back, I stopped. And a couple of my friends emailed me and said, why have you stopped? Carry on. We really like it. And
oh, that's awesome.
It was really nice. I was
okay, I'll carry on.
Great.
And I remember I went to Glastonbury and blogged the whole thing from my mobile phone and genuinely think I was the first person to do that and have yet to have any challenges on it to the point where I even bought the URL glastonblog.co.uk or glastonblog.com, I forget. And then, yeah, the whole thing was blogged from my N95? Anyway, we digress.
No, that's okay.
So, yeah, that's when I started blogging.
Sure. So then Lucozade Energy, you went traveling around, then you managed all their social media presence.
Yeah.
Where did you go for them?
So, the summer of 2009, went sandboarding in Namibia.
Wow.
Cattle ranching in Wyoming. Yacht racing in Zimbabwe. Glacier climbing in the Alps. Damn. And then yacht racing in the Caribbean.
Wow. That's a pretty full-on summer. That sounds absolutely amazing.
It was all right. It was all right.
Any one like highlight of a super memorable time of any of those?
So many.
I'm sure there's loads, but like, can you pick one?
The Zimbabwe trip, we took the client with us. The Lucozade client came with us. And he was cool. He was this New Zealand guy called Dave, and he was just so chilled out about everything. And we were sat, I think we stayed at the Victoria Hotel right on Victoria Falls, and we're sat having breakfast just watching people bungee jump off the bridge, and he just leaned back to me, and there's another guy called Sam who came on every trip. He said to me and Sam, if you can get the guys to sign the rights off, as in it's not Lucozade's problem if they jump off, if they die, I'll expense the whole thing. So all six of us can do it today. I was like, okay, cool, let's do it.
Wow.
And it was only me and Sam that did it in the end because the four competition winners bottled it.
I would be terrified
if you were. And so it was just me, Sam, and the client who bungee jumped off Victoria Falls Bridge.
Wow.
Which I then filmed on my phone. And then there's a YouTube video of me hanging upside down going, hi, I'm James Watley. That's a Zimbabwe. And this was a bungee.
That's so funny. All right, so not going through everything, but you now for the past 4 years, just going back to the present a little bit, and well, we'll still keep jumping around.
That's fine.
You're now the digital director or digital strategy director for Ogilvy & Mazer.
Yep.
So for anybody who doesn't know, it's like one of the biggest, if not the biggest, advertising agency in the world. Like it's one of the biggest. So what does it mean, like on a day-to-day basis, for anybody who doesn't know, who doesn't really know the job, what is it kind of, yeah.
So my job is to champion and to drive digital throughout the agency.
Mm.
I have like a mini, like 5-10% group role, which is raising the profile and doing thought leadership pieces. And, you know, everyone has to do that every now and then. And so it could be everything from sitting down with planners and making sure we're choosing the right digital digital channels, or even further up, working out what the role for digital and the role for social, the role for mobile is within an overall kind of channel plan.
Mm-hmm.
It could be coming up with creative concepts to work in channel, so working with creative departments. A lot of the time it's working with the account team to sell those ideas in.
Mm.
So I've got a very fortuitous.
Do you have a team for that, or are you just like Batman flying around from everywhere? And
I have been a bit of everyone? Batman flying around, but I'm growing the team.
Batman's the right superhero analogy.
It's more like an emergency helicopter all over the place, of which you're just trying to find more funding so you can get more helicopters. I have hired one person particularly, and she is brilliant, and she's kind of taken a whole lot of stuff off me.
Cool.
And my direct boss has kind of moved up slightly and relinquished some of his stuff, which means I have to then step up, which is really nice. And so the agency is changing a lot at the moment. We've just got a new CEO. The new CCO has started. The new CSO is about to start. So the whole place is going to...
Yeah, Chief Operating Officer, Strategy Officer.
Chief Exec, so CEO.
Yeah, Chief Exec.
Chief Strategy and Chief Creative.
Yeah. to just make sure we cover the grounds of anybody who doesn't know acronyms.
So I would imagine within about 3 or 4 months, the whole agency will change completely.
Wow. Can you give us an example of a project that you worked on or that was released that might illustrate a bit better what you're doing? Or
so probably the best one or most famous one is we did a load of work for Expedia, where we came up with a brand platform called Travel Yourself Interesting, which was Expedia believes that we uncovered an audience within Expedia's kind of customer base. And we call them believers.
Okay.
And they're people who would travel every year without fail, sometimes twice, even in a recession, because they believed that travel was essential and it helped them become a better person.
Okay.
And even though it only made up 20% of their consumers, we uncovered that they had 80% of the spend. So we changed the brand platform and came up with Travel Yourself Interesting. And if you look at any of the advertising, it's about there's normally somebody who wouldn't succeed in social situations succeeding in a social situation because they've traveled.
Got it.
And it's normally at the expense of somebody who normally would. Hmm. And it was quite funny. That's and fun. It went on for 2 or 3 years.
And I'll add the links if there's any, like, I don't know if there's case study videos and stuff like that. So I'll add the links in the show notes.
And I think the Effie paper we put in, it's Effie, isn't it? Yeah. Effie paper we put in. Had something like for every euro we spent, they got
in. Effie's an advertising effectiveness award, by the way. Yeah. Just
for every euro spent, we got 11 euros back.
Okay, go. Wow. Impressive.
And in the UK, it was for every pound spent, we got £6 back.
Okay.
But it was all encompassing.
Yeah.
And so that was the TV.
Yeah.
And in the ad, we did some great print, we did some great radio. And then we did for digital, did for social, we did an activation called Travel Your Tweet Interesting, which was all around driving mobile downloads. So everything was always driving towards downloading the new Expedia app, which is beautiful, actually, really quite useful and beautiful. And it was basically, if you were to tweet using hashtag TYI, we would take that tweet, travel it interesting, and then send it back to you within 60 minutes.
So you'd have a team rewriting stuff?
No. Or? So for example, we took a tweet by Matt Lucas, who's a UK comedian, and we took that, we sent it to South Africa.
Okay.
Had it carved into meat.
Oh, okay.
Put it out.
Yes.
Lions ate this meat tweet. Yes. We filmed that and then sent it back and tweeted it back at Matt Lucas and said, hey, at Matt Lucas, we've traveled your tweet. Interesting. Check it out.
Right. That's awesome. It's very cool, right?
All within 60 minutes. The amount of planning that went into that. But I tell you what, though, whenever I give, and I've given that case study a lot.
I'm sure.
So I do a fair amount of public speaking.
Yeah.
The thing I always have to talk about is kind of the content spectrum when we talk about this, because at one end you've got, oh, so advertising. You know, of course they took a tweet. Of course they carved it. I mean, had lions eat it. Oh my God, it's so advertising. But that cost a fortune. Well, actually, no. Because this is when you kind of activate the network. We spoke to the Cape Town office.
Mm-hmm.
They went down and shot it for us, £500 for day rate, whatever. Phoned up the local safari park. I think we donated £500 and said, well, the lion, you know, can we pay you? He goes, well, I'm going to feed the lions anyway. They're going to be hungry. So it doesn't matter as long as it's me. And then it's just a case of editing it. And we had an editor on behind hand. So that whole thing itself probably cost a couple of grand.
It's the logistical infrastructure and organization that took a lot, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And at the other end, you know, we created about 150, I think, ones for reactive people just tweeting us in.
Mm.
And we did that through a website called Fiverr.
Yep.
Fiverr.com. And you just upload something. Someone says, I'll do a song for you. It's like, okay, well, if I double it, can you turn it around within 60 minutes? Yep, sure. So you pay someone £10 and they'll sing a tweet back to you, or they'll put a tweet in a bottle and throw it out to water, or they'll get their parrot to pick the tweet out of a deck of cards. So random. But again, that kind of, to answer the original question, that level of integration, taking a brand platform, working out, okay, what can we do with that brand platform in channel?
Yeah.
Championing it so it becomes actually a hero piece of content as opposed to an afterthought that we do later on.
Yeah.
Makes it a full 360 picture.
Yeah. Brilliant. Excellent. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
And looking at brands these days and companies, who do you think, or do you have an example of somebody or brand that's doing really, really well in terms of social, digital?
Oh, I knew you were going to ask me that.
it's a staple. I try to ask original questions, but sometimes I fall back on the things.
Just such a heavy critic. My brain is
completely... I know, that's why it's actually often more difficult to talk about what's good than talk about what's bad. Let's switch and talk about the voicemail.
Okay. I'll come back to that.
Yeah. So the voicemail is your podcast.
Yes, it is.
That you run with Stefan Constantinescu. I'm not pronouncing that.
Constantinescu.
Sorry. that was ridiculous. I apologize to Stefan.
It's fine.
Tell us about your podcast, please.
So it's called The Voicemail. Stefan and I have known each other for years. We met each other at Mobile World Congress. In fact, when I started at Mobazines and I started doing a bit of blogger outreach, Stefan was one of the first bloggers that I spoke to. He and I started blogging about mobile about the same time.
Yeah.
He used to have a website called ringnokia.com, and he would call himself Nokia's own stalker, and he would like write up all the Nokia news he could. And he and I have known each other for ages, got drunk together loads, partied together loads in the mobile tech scene. And then three years ago now, I tweeted, I'd love to do a podcast, you know, because I used to write for the mobile industry, a website called Mobile Industry Review, which used to be called SMS Text News.
Mm-hmm.
But they then started a podcast, which turned into a video podcast, which turned into a show. And then one summer, me, Ben Smith, Ewan McLeod, and Dan Lane used to produce 30 minutes of mobile tech news video per week.
Wow.
Topping out around 250,000 views. Crazy.
That must take quite a while to manage as well, right?
Yeah, which is why we did it only for a summer.
That's anyway. Actually another one of my questions, sorry. I know you know we're talking about all the projects that you have, and you have a very busy job as well.
Yeah.
Is there any particular structure, organizational, anything that you do to keep up with everything? Like with your writing, with your podcast, with your...
We'll come back to it.
Yeah, sure. Let's absolutely.
Anyway, I tweeted something like, I'd love to do a podcast, don't know who to do it with, don't know how to even go about it.
Mm.
And a mutual friend of ours, a chap named Michael, saw Stefan tweet the same thing about a week before and connected us both via the same tweets. I mean, guys, do you even follow each other? What the hell? I thought you're supposed to be buddies. And we just missed it. We just never thought of each other.
Right.
And then he said, we emailed each other and he went, if you're in, you're in. I'm like, yeah, I'm in. He goes, okay, well, and this mic we're talking to each other with right now.
Which is the one that you recommended and I have the same.
Yes. The Yeti Blue. Stefan sent me the link and said, if you're in, buy one of these. And they're about 100 quid, right?
Mm,
about
80 something quid. Something like that, yeah.
I was like, okay, fine. And we both emailed each other the receipts. I was like, right, now we have to go into it. And that was it.
It's a great way to show the commitment, right?
Yeah, exactly. Mm. And we've done one show face-to-face. I was in Helsinki. He was living in Helsinki at the time when I was there. And we did a show face-to-face, which was awesome. We just got drunk together.
Sorry, for anybody who's listening, like, so the concept is...
Sorry, yes. Stefan and I talk for around 30 to 40 minutes every Sunday night. About mobile tech news. What's the latest mobile news that's happening? You know, Apple's latest announcements, Samsung's latest announcements.
Yeah.
Stefan is a news hound, always has been. And so he used to write at an amazing website called tabdump.com, which has since stopped. He's gone back to the university. He's always churning through news. He used to work for courts for a little while.
Mm-hmm.
And I've always been more of a, let's have a think about what that means and, you know, and so on. And so it's, I used to call it the pinky in the brain.
Yeah.
He would be the one with the brain. I was just sitting on the other end just reacting. Going, oh my God, that's really cool. Oh no, that's terrible.
So mobile tech news, definitely check out the voicemail.
Thevoicemail.net,
.net. And people can get it on iTunes and everything
it's
else.
Right? Yeah. 5-star rated. And we get about 5,000 downloads a month, I think.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
Thanks, man.
Brilliant. Cool. Anything else about that? Or
No, it's cool.
Back to the organization and...
If you've got a passing interest in mobile, give it a shot.
Yeah.
And there's some swearing.
Yeah.
You were going to ask me about organizing, how I get things done.
Yeah. Is there any particular...
So just to set the scene a little bit, so project-wise, we've covered a lot.
Yes.
But things that I actually just do really these days, I would say, are the voicemail every week. I've got 5 things on Friday.
Yeah, which we didn't mention yet, that's your newsletter. But there's lots to talk through, so...
But that's it, really.
Okay.
And writing, which is ostensibly part of my job.
Okay.
So
So five things Friday is like you pick up whatever. Actually, similar question on consuming articles, content, videos. Do you like split your time to do that, or just consuming any time and all the time?
Mainly on the tube.
Okay.
But if I'm around, I've got so use Feedly as the platform. So take RSS feeds into Feedly. Mm-hmm. But then as the consumption app, I use a thing called GReader.
Okay.
On Android. And then I use Reader, R-E-E-D-E-R, for Mac, which is amazing and beautiful. Okay.
Actually, I haven't
used it. And I've got it on my iPad as well, I think. But all my RSS feeds come into it. And Twitter, and my Twitter favourites, basically go in there and you'll find where I hide all my goodies. Mm. And I tend to email myself during the week. If I find something good, I share it, and I just share it myself. And it goes into my inbox.
Yeah.
And that's... today's Thursday, so tonight probably when we're back from where we're going tonight, I'm going to check my inbox for what I've emailed myself in the week. Mm. But I've been on holiday this week, so I've been slowly typing up a few things here and there. So this week's five things on Friday is going to be quite big, I think, just okay. because I've had more time to put some thoughts
cool.
around it.
Cool.
But my Thursday lunchtime at work is mm-hmm. always blocked out to write it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how I manage that. It's just an hour. And then Sunday nights... Recording the voicemail takes 45 minutes to an hour. So literally 2 hours a week, I do a newsletter and a podcast. Everything else, so writing for the drum, which I do, is technically part of work, so I'm good at doing work time.
Yeah.
Probably don't. I do it when my brain finishes noodling sure. what it's noodling on and just starts writing it down.
Sure.
But yeah, okay. I would say cool. that's it, really. Have I missed any side projects? I don't think so.
No.
I just have done a lot of side projects over
yes,
the years.
Yes, of course. We talked about a bunch of those, but that's what's going on now. Well, that's awesome. Thank you. All right. So I usually go and start wrapping up slowly with what I'm calling the cool down questions.
The cool down questions.
Yes. I'm still not sure of the name, but
I think having segments is a good thing.
Yeah, I'm reworking a couple of things. But anyway, and the main one, of course, is because it's the Ice Cream for Everyone podcast. It's got to be an ice cream question.
Yeah.
I'm trying this one out. Okay, so what mobile phone model, past or present, should be made into an ice cream? And in which case, what flavor would it be?
What the hell? That would be an E71 and be mint choc chip.
Fantastic. So the E71 is like, I don't even know what that is.
So E71 was Nokia's, and you speak to any proper mobile geek and they will tell you, I guarantee you'll hit an E71 pretty quickly.
Okay.
It was the last beautiful phone, right?
It was the last
beautiful Nokia phone, right?
Okay.
And it was their kind of QWERTY keyboard, BlackBerry response. And it was just sleek. It was all metal. And I remember having it, and it was the first phone where I thought properly appealed to both sexes.
Yeah.
And I remember being in New York, I think at like the Web 2.0 conference, and between my hotel and getting to the conference, like I must have stopped for a coffee, stopped at some lights, stopped doing something else. About three or four different women all stopped me and went, "What is that phone? How can I get it? It's beautiful."
Really?
And it was, yeah. I'll show you.
And is mint choc chip also your favorite flavor? Or is
yeah, it is. Yeah, okay, absolutely.
And of course, another area of interest is gaming. So we've talked a little bit about your video gaming. Yeah. Did you play any like role-playing games or board games at any time? Or
I played a little bit. My uncle was really into it, and he made a few of his own games, actually.
Okay, cool.
But I started with Hero Quest.
Yeah. Me too.
Which I was really into, and I had all the expansion packs for that. And
did you write your own adventures and stuff?
Yeah, yeah. I wrote a few. Yeah. And then there was the Space Marines one, which I got into. But that was it, really.
Okay. Back to video games, just on the memory side of things, is there a particular console or system that like has your dearest gaming memories, you think?
I had a chat with some friends about this the other day. There's a couple of guys I play with a lot. Mario Kart 64.
Yeah.
Having a bedroom filled with about 10 or 12 different friends, all bundled in, friends and girlfriends, all bundled in, all about 15, 16 years old or 17 years old, all fighting around, doing like a Mario Kart League or, you know, that's just, that playability, that fun is missing, actually.
I agree.
It's all online and it's quite nice. I mean, you know, when I play now, 9 times out of 10 it's online, I'm chatting to friends.
Yeah.
But nothing beats having everyone around your house all playing the same game together.
That's one of the reasons I really still love board games and tabletop games in general. Did you try any of the new or hear about the new board game cafes that are starting to open? There's like, I think, a couple now in London.
I haven't, but I would be interested to.
We'll talk about that later. And I'll put the links on the show notes. There's one called Drafts in East London. And yeah. I think there's another one in Southwest London somewhere.
Nice.
But I mean, we'll talk about that. And just generally, what kind of games do you play? What are your favorite kinds of games these days, video games?
Right now, playing Division.
Okay.
But
that's
it's
an action shooter, we call that, right?
Yeah. But it's kind of semi-RPG. You kind of, you build weapons, you hunt down things.
Okay.
But it's one of those things where there's a three-man team that I play in, that I play a game called Destiny with.
Yeah.
And when Destiny's kind of going through a low point at the moment. And so one guy was like, look, guys, if I get the Division, will you two get it as well so we can play together? I was like, okay. So we had a commitment to do it.
That was a tough choice, right?
Yeah, right. But I played heavily through the Assassin's Creed games.
Yeah.
That was useful being in Turkey this week. I'm like, I've climbed that. I'm pretty sure I killed a guy in this palace. That was really nice getting my bearings. And the most recent game to break its way into my top five all-time games was The Last of Us. You played that?
No, I've heard of it. I've not really been playing much video games lately.
So PlayStation 4 is my first ever PlayStation. I've always been a Nintendo person, and then I got an Xbox. PS4. So everyone played Last of Us on PS3, but they did it remastered on PS4, got it. And when that game finished, I just put the controller down and just was in stunned shock of what an incredible storytelling experience that was. You would love it.
I should absolutely love it.
All
right, cool. Brilliant. All right, cool. What is there anything coming up in the future for you that might be exciting? So I don't know, that might be things you're speaking at or any other events that people might be interested in checking out by the time this comes out.
You know what? My brain's... when is this coming out?
It should be out in a month or so, somewhere like
that. So my brain's completely blank because I'm on holiday.
Yes, technically on holiday. That's true.
But right. I guess the only thing would be, so if you look at my Twitter profile,
yeah,
at twitter.com/whatidiot, I forgot the Twitter URL.
Dude has like so many followers.
This is how successful my holiday has been.
Yeah, that's great. I mean, actually, really you're good. Just, you know, one.
So if you look me up on Twitter, at WhatlyDudes,
yeah.
The pinned tweet is the sign-up form for my newsletter.
The newsletter, which is five things on Friday, yeah. Which is five cool things that you found that you want to share with everybody every Friday.
And that covers film, comic books, social media, advertising, shit I find on the internet, cool art, anything really.
Fantastic.
But that is where you'll find out. If I'm speaking at something, I'll tend to put it in there and say, you can come and see me at this thing.
Yeah, fantastic. Well, that's about it.
Thanks, man.
So much.
That was really good fun, awesome.
Right?
Yeah.
Excellent. All right. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Cheers. Bye-bye.
All right, ice cream fans. That's another episode done. Another episode of the Ice Cream for Everyone podcast. I can't believe I've been publishing weekly for however many weeks. I mean, I think this is my 25th episode or 26th episode. 25th or 26th. So I've been publishing weekly for at least, I think, 20 weeks, 20 episodes. That's quite something. I don't know how long I'm going to keep it up, but I guess I'll keep it up for as long as it works, as long as I can. And I just want for more people to listen to it. If you enjoyed the episode, and if you're still listening to me right now, you probably did, how about sharing it with a friend? Just throw the link on the social network or share the link with a friend of yours on email or Facebook or Twitter, whatever it is. Or if you think just one person is going to enjoy it, send it to them. And again, if you have time, I'm insisting, but it really makes a hell of a difference. If you have time, please, and if you enjoy it, like take a few minutes, put it a rating or a review on iTunes or the iPhone podcast application or whichever podcast application you use to listen to this. Of course, if you have feedback, questions, comments, I always love to hear from you. You can contact me on Twitter. My username is @HippoWill. You can post a comment on the Ice Cream for Everyone page on Facebook. You can find my email or just like email me at Willem, W-I-L-L-E-M, @icecreamforeveryone.net. Leave a review on iTunes, already said it. That's, I'm easily contactable. I mean, you Google from my name, you just find everything. But that's about it. That's about it for now. See you soon for another episode of the Ice Cream for Everyone podcast. Enjoy the rest of your week. Bye-bye.